listening to West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Matt Jackford, here with Joel Cummins, keyboardist for the world-touring prog rock band Umphrey's McGee. They recently announced their very own festival, the Woodlands Festival, in Charleston, South Carolina, which will take place this November 8th and 9th, and they've also been on West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Mountain Stage. Joel has also recently co-authored the book, The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career. Joel, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Matt. Good to be chatting with you today.
Yeah, well, let's talk about just Joel for a minute. Where are you originally from?
Grew up outside of Chicago in a little town called Western Springs. Went to high school in LaGrange, Illinois, so kind of southwest suburbs. And went to high school at Lyons Township High School and really got involved in music when I was in high school.
Right, yeah. And so you went to Notre Dame for college?
Correct, yep. Got a degree in music theory with a concentration in piano performance from there.
Right, and now where do you live?
Now I live in Santa Monica, California.
So oh, nice.
My wife and I moved to Venice Beach about 8 years ago, and then just recently got a place right on the Santa Monica-Venice border. So,
nice.
We're definitely digging that, and you know, especially when the band's out touring January, February, March, and we're able to come back to that weather. It's a pretty enjoyable thing.
Right, yeah. So how long have you been playing piano? When did you start playing music?
Started playing piano at 8 years old, and my mom was really the one who said, okay, you're going to learn an instrument. You can pick any instrument you want, but you're going to practice 30 minutes a day. We'll let you take one day off a week.
Nice.
And, you know, if you don't like that instrument, that's okay, but then you got to pick another instrument. So I started on piano because pretty much the church that we were going to at the time, the pianist there, her name was Kathy Best, and she was just incredible. I mean, was playing like Bach cantatas and, you know, doing alternate arrangements of stuff. And it was really impressive. And I just assumed that, you know, everybody had that experience at different
right.
churches, you know, and later on I figured out that like, I was like, oh, wow,
yeah.
No, that was not the case at all. So,
right.
I was pretty lucky to have been able to hear music like that at an early age to really inspire me.
Right. So did you grow up in the classical tradition then when you were playing piano, you know, etudes, things like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I studied classical and, you know, there was jazz and, you know, some ragtime and blues and basic stuff like that that I learned before I got to college. And then really got into classical music theory once I was in college. And, you know, I still do a lot of solo piano stuff to the day. I probably
right.
do about four or five shows a year just on my own. And I'll play, you know, some Debussy or Beethoven or Mozart or Chopin at those. I think it's just so important to pass that on to listeners. And I think a lot of the Umphrey's audience probably is familiar with that music, but there are a lot of people that aren't. And so for me, that's something that brings me a lot of happiness.
Right. Yeah. You're a Debussy guy. I like that. What sort of pieces do you like out of those composers you mentioned?
You know, I've played the Image series a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I've been working on.
Yeah.
Big fan of that. The Pour Le Piano Suite is probably my favorite of all time.
Wow.
So I can play a couple parts of that, but not all of it. And, you know, it's one of those things. There's just so many different pieces to discover, and that's one of the things that I listen to all the time when I'm on the road, you know, especially flying. I listen to a lot of a cappella vocal music and some solo Debussy piano. There's certainly a quality to sort of the impressionistic era of music that I really love there that I think fits into a lot of what the Umphrey sound is too.
Right, yeah. And actually I've heard a Mozart quote in one of your songs in Der Blütenkot actually. And
oh yeah, right. It's the 40th, I think.
Yeah, the Mozart 40th symphony. I think I lost my mind when I heard that. That was amazing.
Yeah, we've got that in there, and we've also got, let's see, in Thin Air, it's, I believe, Grieg's In the Hall of the Mountain King.
Nice, yeah.
See, we have a few different ones that we throw out from time to time.
Right. That's great. Well, I love that classical is making an influence in your music. So let's talk about the band. Let's jump into some Mumfries McGee. It's pretty well known that you all met at Notre Dame University and then started playing together after that. But this is a very general question. How did you all get from college band to world touring prog rock phenomenon with a dedicated following?
I mean, it was really a lot of baby steps for us from the beginning to this moment right now. And we never really had this sort of, eureka moment where all of a sudden people were coming out to our shows. And so that's something that I think has kept us grounded, but it's also allowed us to kind of be smarter about how we make decisions of what we do. And, we've also always kept in mind the idea that we need to have balance and be healthy and happy on and off the road. And so, now we're at the point where we might tour 5 weekends in a row, but we're only doing 3 or 4 shows in a row, and then everybody flies home and goes and sees their wives and kids. And
right.
So that I think that, just kind of that nice, steady progression. And, we really toured in concentric circles and just kind of got from, South Bend to Chicago to Indianapolis to, eventually New York and Colorado. And so going around different parts of the country, but doing it in a smart way to where we weren't biting off more than we could chew was a smart move that I think worked out for us in the end.
Right. Yeah. I mean, actually, from what I understand, you managed the band for a little bit just starting out. What was that like, and how hard was that to, double your playing abilities too?
Yeah, it definitely, toward the end, it got to the point where I was getting a little frustrated and not having enough time to spend on musical stuff.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
To start out, I had been booking my other college bands, so I had contacts at probably 5 or 6 of the bars and clubs around South Bend. So the fact that I had already established those relationships was just a natural progression to really, start booking shows and doing things like that. I mean, that was the extent of managing at the beginning.
Right. Yeah.
And making flyers to pass out.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You got to do all the promotional stuff and still not.
Yeah. And,
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, back in the day, people were trading tapes. And so, we were always making lots of tapes, and then eventually that turned into CDs, and we would kind of flood markets that we were going to. We had friends that lived all over the U.S. Because of those Notre Dame connections. And that really helped us out, kind of get a foot in the door at a lot of those places.
Right, yeah. So you sort of slowly build it up. And then now you're touring, all over the world, even Iceland coming up here in a bit. What was one of the coolest venues you played at? Since, you've played at Red Rocks now. I mean, you've done all sorts of great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like you kind of got to disallow Red Rocks, because I tell people Red Rocks all the time.
Okay, yeah.
They actually changed the Polestar Venue of the Year award to the Red Rocks Award because it had won like 10 years ago.
Okay, right, gotcha.
And they're like, all right.
Yeah.
But, we really love playing the Tabernacle in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
That one has some of the, just the best energy out there. I've gotten to play the Auditorium Theater in Chicago. That was pretty spectacular. The Beacon Theater a number of times in New York. The Fox in Oakland. These are all really, really fun venues.
Right, yeah. And are you excited for Iceland coming up?
Immensely excited. And I got to be honest, I was really pleasantly surprised with the fact that it sold out. I did not think that would happen in one day of things going on sale. So
right,
that
yeah.
was, I think, a big surprise to many of us. But it really speaks to the fans wanting to do unique and different things, and we try to pick a good destination once a year, and keep the rest of it as more domestic style touring in the U.S.
Right, yeah, and having that devoted fan base really helps. I mean, they'll fly across the Atlantic for you, which is great to have in your pocket.
No doubt, and it's something that I'm really grateful for, and I think it's such a cool thing that over the years there's lots of fans that you know, have made friends and become friends that are in different places around the country and have a lot of fun traveling, not just to see the band anymore, but to hang out with their buddies. And, you know, I think there have been a few husbands and wives that have met too, but I love hearing those stories about how, you know, somebody made a lifelong friend at one of our shows.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And another thing, so you do all this touring, you know, you spend a lot of time together, but y'all are still great friends. I mean, how do you keep that friendship energized after two decades or more of making music? You know, how do you not get on each other's nerves, you know?
That's a topic covered extensively in my book, Matt.
So, all right. Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. But I think the real secret is to, you got to communicate, and, you know, things and people change. And there's also, you know, each individual relationship is its own thing, and we're all different people and kind of have to accept that. Mm-hmm. And once you sort of, you know, accept somebody for who they are, whoever it is that they want to be, and not put a box around your expectation of who they could be, I think that really opens things up on the creative end. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's life happens. And I mean, even right now, honestly, a lot of us are going through some pretty tough stuff. And the fact that we have each other and are able to really lean on each other in those challenging times is something that makes the road experience even a little, you know, more rewarding. And there's, you know, there's a depth to this that we've been together for so long and friends for so long. And, you know, we know each other that well. So, right. You know, it starts with respect and, you know, just kind of much like on stage, being a good listener.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm sure, you know, you have to go through some conflict resolution every now and again, I'm sure.
Yeah. There's, you know, there's always things to talk about, and sometimes they're musical and sometimes it's other stuff going on in our lives that, you know, we need to talk about with each other. But, you know, it's important to not let the little problems become big problems.
Right. Yeah. And so you've only had one member leave the band so far. I mean, can you tell me about that? And then what the audition process was like thereafter?
Yeah. So, in 2002, 4 years into the band, Mike, our original drummer, decided that he wanted to pursue a career in medicine. And so, you know, we had about 3 months where we were kind of auditioning people, and it was pretty amazing because the first thing we got in the mail was actually Chris Myers' audition.
That's amazing.
He not only sent like a CD with stuff, but he sent a video, and I mean it was
awesome.
Like really well put together. And it was funny because it kind of led to two things. Number one, us being like, okay, well this dude's awesome, and then us being like, okay, I guess we're going to have, like, you know, 25 of these people who are complete badasses, and,
right,
you know, can try out for the band. And it was pretty comical that, like, the next 75 all paled by comparison
yeah,
to the
right.
first one that we looked at.
Right.
So we brought Chris out to hang out with us. He came over to Jake's house one day, and we jammed a little bit, and then he came out to our show at the Park West in, I think, November of 2002, and just hung out with everybody and watched Mike, and then played. I think we did a final audition for him like after the show. And I remember Mike Miro kind of sitting on the side of the stage and nodding his head in approval, kind of being like, this is your guy,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so, you know, our relationship with Mike was always one where it was like, he was always going to be part of our family. He expressed interest in, you know, helping us make the decision if we wanted that. And, you know, we were like, yeah, of course, man. Like, we would definitely want your opinion for who you think could do this best, because there's so many styles and it, you know, it can be a challenging thing for what we want to try to accomplish. So,
right.
Chris was really able to take us to the next level in a lot of ways and kind of even open up the palette a little bit more. And, you know, we added this sort of heavier, more progressive element once he joined the band.
Yeah, and he has the vocals, too. You know, he also can step out and do the vocals.
Yeah, Chris is an outstanding vocalist. You know, and Mike was, too. Mike sang a lot of leads on stuff as well.
Oh, nice.
Mike was kind of, he was really a comedian as well. I mean, he was one of the funniest people I've ever known. And so that was something that came out on stage quite a bit. And, you know, Chris is really like the impression master. So he can do a really good, you know, like De Niro, you know, Sinatra, Mayor Richard Daley from Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a lot of good impressions in the bag.
Great. Awesome. Now you have all six together, and now you're all starting your own festival, the Woodlands Music and Arts Festival, which will be in Charleston, South Carolina on November 8th and 9th. So why'd you all decide to put on your own festival?
Well, this is kind of our second festival that we've decided to put on. We also are the hosts of Summer Camp in Chillicothe, Illinois.
Right.
That's something that is going to be in its 20th year next year. So we've been a partner in that since the mid-2000s. So, you know, we have a little bit of experience of doing that in the Midwest, but we've always been looking for something special that we could do around Charleston. And we've done a couple things, sort of in that vein over the years. We created something called the Chucktown Ball, that we did for a couple years. And, you know, Ryan, our bassist, lives in Charleston, and Vince, our manager, one of our co-managers, lives there. So it's a place that is kind of a second home to us at this point. And when the idea of the Woodlands came up and we were able to take a look at the site and how just beautiful and special that was. And I also know that, you know, that time of the year, it's a little cooler and, you know, hopefully fingers crossed we're past the end of hurricane season. I mean, technically you are.
Right. I know.
You never know.
Yeah. Early November. It's like iffy, very iffy. So, it's going to be a great location. I mean, the Charleston Woodlands, it's a 6,000 acre private nature reserve. So,
yeah, it's just like an incredible place to be able to host something.
You want to dive in on the lineup?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for instance, Big Something, you know, those guys are playing with us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Spafford is that band is one of the great up and coming improvisational acts that's out there, and they've probably played with us, I'm guessing about like 50 shows, you know, over the past 3 or 4 years. So, you know, those guys have become good friends of ours. And I think, you know, in general, this is sort of at the end of festival season. So it's a lot of fun to have a last hurrah with a lot of your friends that you've made over the years.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Looks like a great lineup, great location. Tickets on sale now. How can you get them?
That is a great question. They don't tell me that stuff.
Okay. All right. Hey, we don't give Joel that information. Sorry. I think I know.
I'm sure on the Umphrey's website. I'm not sure who's hosting the real tickets.
I think you can go to Umphrey's.com and then check out, you know, the Woodland Festival banner that pops up, and then, you know, look for different packages on the website. So that's going to be again November 8th and the 9th, and it looks to be a great lineup and show and location. So now I'd like to talk about going to a live Umphrey show. I mean, it's quite a spectacle, orally and visually, from, you know, edgy guitar solos, got sensational keys, you know, and a dazzling light show. I mean, there's so much to take in. But I've got to talk about it because there's some breaking news today, a little bit heartbreaking in some ways. Your light engineer, Jeff Waffle, has decided to call it quits after years and years with the band. And he was supposed to call it quits at the end of this year, but decided to step down today due to health issues. So, I mean, how did that hit you? What were your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, well, Jefferson's a good friend of mine, and like anyone, when, you know, you're out on the road and you're getting physically beat up and starting to have issues, we don't want to be in a situation where, you know, we put him in a worse shape than he is right now. So, it's something that it's the end of a chapter for sure, but we always kind of try to look at situations like this as opportunities. And, you know, we're thinking more about what we're going to be doing moving forward. And You know, we're eternally grateful for Jeff's work over the 11 years that he's been with us. He's put on some awesome shows, and we'll be good friends for the rest of our lives, which I'm happy about.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, we're just very appreciative of all the work that that Jefferson put in for us.
Right. He's done some great work over the years. And you all be, you know, looking in the coming months for a new light engineer, right?
Yeah, we've already got it down to, like, the four or five people that we think would be the the best fits for us. So, you know, we've probably had about 50 different people submit resumes and show interest for the position. So, so it's definitely something we have no shortage of people to choose from, which is the lucky thing. And, you know, like you said, we're a very tight-knit family. So I really hope that we can find somebody that wants to do this with us for, like, you know, the next 10 to 15 years.
Right, exactly. And, you know, and so they can learn your music and sync it up incredibly well. I mean, just like Jefferson did. And that's what's, you know, so great about that light show. It's synced up so well with the music.
Yeah, right. It's a huge thing to have, you know, lights that are complementary to what's going on musically. And it kind of helps inform the listener, especially because some of our stuff is a little bit challenging to understand or to get what's going on. I think we're committed to finding somebody excellent and to let them kind of create a new palette of whatever it is that we want to do, you know.
So who comes up with the set list, you know, y'all play, and how much of it is actually set and how much is improvised?
We all kind of take turns doing it, sort of whoever's feeling it or has time that day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're obviously, as we tour, various people in the band have different obligations depending on where we are. So it's pretty casual, probably a little more casual than most fans think.
Okay.
But, you know, occasionally at the beginning of the week, like this week, we made a list of like 4 days and then tried to split up songs over the days so that we have an idea of what we're going to play and everybody can kind of look at it. And, you know, if there's something we need to practice a day in advance, we can start working on something. Yeah. So it's really a pretty malleable process, and sometimes there will be a different person that picks the songs from the person that actually puts things together as the set list. Sometimes it'll be a couple people working on it together. You know, there are lots of different ways that things happen, and
right.
I think that's one of the reasons why things are so fresh and varied. And I saw something, I don't remember who published this, but it was a study of, like, you know, hundreds of bands, different careers, and who had the set lists that were the most similar each night and who had the set lists that were the most dissimilar each night. And we were the farthest on the spectrum of the band for having the most variety in our set list.
Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of cool. And honestly, it's something that is pretty fun for us, you know, being in 22 years into the band, to be able to still go back and play, you know, pull out a song. I mean, maybe we only play it two or three times a year, but something that the fans used to really love, that maybe at one point we played 25 or 30 times a year. But, you know, we're always introducing new music into the rotation. So there's just not enough time to always revisit the old stuff. You know,
right.
We want to focus more on playing new music and keep each other challenged. It's a fun thing to do. And, you know, and then there's probably 35 to 40% of each night that's improvisational. And kind of anything can happen in the moment. Occasionally we'll have a vague outline of something backstage, but for the most part, we're just kind of flying by the seat of our pants and,
cool.
and trying to create in those moments.
Right, yeah, and you have mics set up on stage that don't go out to the audience. They just go to your in-ears, so people are just shouting
right,
out
yeah,
things.
We have talkback mics, exactly. Yep.
That's
so sometimes cool. we'll give cues through that way. We also have some visual stuff that we'll do, you know, that we can see each other on stage. So, yeah, we have a few different ways that we can kind of communicate while the music's playing, and that really has helped to open up the improvisational avenues to do lots of different things.
That's awesome. So you're shouting. What do you shout into the mic? Let's move, like, 8 bars and we go, or what's something you might say?
Yeah, like, you know, it could be like, okay, stop cue to just guitars right here. And so we'll have our, you know, our LD, Jefferson, or, you know, our new LD will be on in-ears as well. So they'll be able to hit the cue and you know, go right to the guitarist and focus on them for those moments, and then, you know, jump back in. You know, occasionally we'll create like an A and a B section live, And so we'll do kind of like a, you know, we do the lean back cue if it's like go back to the previous idea.
Okay.
So
cool.
That's one thing that we can do visually up there.
That's cool.
Sometimes, you know, I'll yell like, I'll say something like, you know, Jake, keep playing with your plan, and Ryan, let's change the root down a minor third. And
whoa,
so we'll
cool,
go from
nice.
Like A major to F sharp minor while something that is on top continues going over the top of it.
Yeah.
So we'll do stuff like that, key changes. Sometimes, you know, tempo change, you know, I mean, really, it's pretty endless, the kind of things that we can do up there.
That's cool. That's some heady theory stuff going on in those mics. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, that makes it interesting. It's like, I don't know, to me, that's one of the, I love being able to hear a riff and then, you know, hear a different root and that riff can work over the top. And all of a sudden, you know, as a listener, it comes off completely differently. It's really cool little simple effect.
Right. Awesome. Do you have a favorite song or songs you like to play?
Yeah. I mean, they kind of rotate, but
okay.
Ones that are always up there, we have a song called Water that we don't play very much. That's a really fun piano workout for me. So I really enjoy playing that one personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, why don't we take a listen to a little bit of it?
One that we play a little more often called Hurt Birdbath that I really like for the improvisational nature of it, and
right.
Kind of has two open-ended sections that you're never sure what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And those moments are always highlights for me.
Right. So if you all have, you know, such improv, I mean, you don't have a click track going on in yours, do you?
We occasionally do use a click track. Chris will be the one who he's the only one who plays with a click track though.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, gotcha.
Yeah, it just depends on, you know, what song it is. I mean, there's obviously a lot of songs we have that have tempo shifts in the middle or to the end or something. So, you know, when that happens, that makes it a little more challenging, but, it sort of depends on the night and the show and the song. But we will occasionally, use that to kind of, you know, if it's a piece that feels like we're having a hard time keeping it, pulling back at that tempo, Chris will, I think especially it's like if we're sound checking something, he'll tell us, he'll be like, hey, I'm going to play along with the click on this. So just so you know,
mm-hmm.
like pull back.
Gotcha.
You know?
Gotcha. Yep.
So yeah.
That's
and
cool.
Then there are times, you know, I think it's important to just kind of go with the live feel and be okay with the tempo flexing a little bit. Like, you know, this is rock and roll. This isn't, we're not being graded on, rhythmic
precision
as far
yeah.
as tempos. You know, nobody's walking out of the show being like, yeah, tempo in that was a little off.
Yeah.
I don't think I'm going to come back.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
Or like even more so being like, yeah, did you notice they were rushing?
Yeah,
man. I don't know. I mean, these guys used to be okay.
Yeah, I want my money back.
I don't think rock and roll fans are thinking too much. I mean, obviously there are extreme examples where you're like, wow, that was terrible. But, you know, for the most part, it's pretty subtle things on our end.
Sure. Right. Right. So what's your practice regimen look like? Are you doing scales, etudes, improv? What's that like?
When I'm home, I mean, I probably try to play about an hour a day. I'll kind of have dedicated times that are for like trying to come up with stuff, but I also kind of wait for those moments. If I'm having a moment of inspiration, it's like, yeah, sit down and record whatever your idea is and at least get the basic idea of that down. But yeah, I don't really do the scales and arpeggio stuff too much anymore. But I do try to play different pieces in different keys and, you know, to solo in different keys and to try to improvise in different keys to make sure that my dexterity is fairly equal across the key area framework.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just try to be constantly working on new things and learning new music. And, you know, some of it's classical, some of it's jazz. You know, I love playing Bill Evans stuff. And
mm-hmm.
I have a couple Charlie Parker tunes that I like to play and Nat Adderley and,
mm-hmm.
you know, guys like that and Miles Davis. But I think it's important to just, you know, continue to learn stuff and to try to do different things. So that's kind of what I'm working on when I'm at home, and I'll try to find a few challenging pieces that will really keep my my chops together too. I think that's important. And then when I'm on the road, it's probably more working on whatever the music is that Umphrey's is doing at that point. And we have a practice gear set up backstage. So we, an hour before the show, we warm up every night.
Cool.
Kind of go through tricky passages or, you know, songs that we haven't played in a while to make sure when we hit them, it feels like we're really together on that. And that also that, you know, the first note of the show feels like we're already in the middle of the show.
Right.
I think that's important to really hit the ground running and get people's attention. You know, we don't want to be a band where they're like, oh yeah, they need the first set to warm up, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I think that's kind of lame.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Good point.
So,
So speaking of regiments, I mean, you're built pretty strong, more than most pianists anyway, including myself. What's the arms day workout like?
You know, I do some yoga and I run, I ski, I play golf.
Nice.
So that's kind of my way that I get exercise, but I've started doing a lot more yoga like in the past 10 years, mostly just to kind of keep my back and my shoulders fairly loose and strong. And, you know, I was having some problems, physically a while back with, you know, back pain and things like that. It's just sitting in a keyboard for that long of a day is not a natural thing.
Right.
And so I really needed to kind of build that up. And that's something that's helped me, stay healthy on the road. So when we have like a 4-show week, I'll try to do something physical 3 of those 4 days and usually just take the last day off and kind of chill. But,
Right. Yeah,
it's important to pick up healthier habits on the road.
Right. Yeah, I know. It's tough when you're, you know, driving around all those different places. You got to be confined to a small area. So yeah, I totally understand that. So your fans are, you know, really dedicated and they're always hungry for your music and content. How did your band create such an appetite for your fans?
I don't know. I mean, you know, we tried to write songs that each new song we wrote to never rewrite like something that we've already done. So I think that sense of originality, is important. You know, we tried to write songs that had emotion and that were about, things that connected with people. And you know, we've continually tried to change up shows and do improvisation that, you know, that's different from night to night. And just having that element of surprise where people know if they come see us 4 nights in a row, they're not going to see a song repeated. That's a pretty attractive
right.
thing to people. And,
right.
you know, even some of our super fans, we have a site called allthingsumphreys.com where people can track their shows and all the, you know, the songs they've seen. And
mm-hmm.
so, you know, all these people now know, they're like, okay, I've seen this song 6 times, but here's one that I've never seen before.
Right.
Maybe we'll get that tonight. And so people really, really love that element of like, you know, we have a pretty wide rotation of songs that we're playing on tour. And, that's something that keeps us on our toes. And I think that the fans really enjoy too.
Cool. That's awesome. That was a great answer for that. So let's finish with the book. Joel, you recently co-authored a new book called The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career. You want to give us a little bit of an overview of this book?
Yeah, so we really started this about 2 years ago. And, you know, the idea was that I've had a lot of people approach me over the years asking for various advice and kind of like we talked about in the beginning of the conversation, from managing the band when we started and booking stuff when we started, to, you know, just generally musically, like how we approach stuff. And so I thought, you know, this is kind of a unique opportunity where I think I do have a book that we could write. And Matt comes from a background of working for Yamaha and Roland. And he started his own ticketing company back in like 2008. So there was a lot of different ground that he had to contribute to what we were doing. But the idea is that, you know, the music business is such a challenging place to navigate, and there are so many talented people who deserve to have successful careers out there, yet there are so many mistakes that can be made, you know, both business-wise and musically, you know, that can derail that. And so I really wanted to put something out there that I thought would would help a younger generation of musicians try to make a career out of it. And so, you know, one of the other really important parts of it was that I tried to recruit a few different people in the business to help give their perspective, you know, decisions they made early on from in the music business or in musically that they felt were important and kind of help put them on their path. So some great conversations in there with Huey Lewis, Susan Tedeschi, Chuck Lavelle, who is the Rolling Stones musical director, played keys with Eric Clapton on 24 Nights and on MTV Unplugged, plays the piano solo in Jessica, Victor Wooten from Bela Fleck and the Flecktones. And, you know, he has these amazing music camps. He has a great book himself called The Music Lesson.
Right.
Ivan Neville, you know, of the Neville family, Taylor Hicks, who won American Idol in 2005. Nikki Glassy, who was Beyonce's touring drummer for a while and now has her own band, Nth Power. Pete Shapiro, who put on the Fare Thee Well Grateful Dead event, owns the Wetlands and then the Brooklyn Bowl stuff. So, you know, and puts on Lochan Festival. Jake Singer, Humphreys McGee's guitarist. Vince and Kevin are managers. There's so much other great advice from other people, I think, that really made this an even more enjoyable project for me to do. But yeah, I thought it would be fun to put all this together, and then hopefully these stories will be helpful and inspiring and help, you know, some young musicians avoid a lot of the pitfalls that we fell into on our way up.
Right. That's great. And that's The Realist Guide to a Successful Music Career. Joel Cummins, keyboardist for Humphreys McGee and now co-author of a new book. Thank you so much for joining us on our show.
You're very welcome. And just so people know, you can find the book on Amazon.com. It's also in the Humphreys website or at the merch table at Humphreys shows on most nights.
Nice. Well, Joel, you know where to get that stuff, so that's great. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, appreciate the in-depth questions. And it's always nice to talk to somebody who knows what they're talking about.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I've actually been to an Humphreys show, so I feel like that helps.
Thanks for having me.